Welcome, Green Future Growers, Progressive Radio Network listeners, and anybody who's new to the show. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer, and let's get growing.
FreeGardenCourse.com. Mike and I have developed some lessons to help you create your very own organic oasis. We'll guide you through the steps to build your perfect natural landscape, an edible earth-friendly yard, a sustainable deep-bed garden, or even start a small profitable market farm. We'll show you how to save time, lower your produce bill, collect usable data, eat healthy, nutritious food with minimal labor, use the most effective and efficient production methods currently being used in backyard gardens as well as market farms, and maybe even help you find some profitable markets. We've designed it to save you time, lower your produce bill, and help you eat healthy, nutritious food. There's checklists, there's outside reading, video assignments. You can join the online Facebook community where there's lots of people from around the world to help you get your garden started today. So remember, freegardencourse.com.
I do have that paused. Okay, there we go. Okay. Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast today. I am super excited to introduce my guest because she's here to talk to us about one of those forward-thinking entrepreneurs who's got a bold, surprising, totally visionary business called Garbage to Gardens. And it's one of the most successful market-based curbside composting companies in the Northeast. They have over 5,000 households, schools, restaurants, businesses that they're servicing. They do events throughout Maine and Massachusetts. I'm super excited to hear about this great business. So Phoebe Little is here to tell us about Garbage to Gardens.
Thank you.
Well, do you want to start by telling us a little bit about yourself and like what your role is there? And
Yeah, sure. I am the community outreach director. And so we're very involved with the community here. So I handle the marketing and I handle the different strategic partnerships and I manage a volunteer program that we have in place, which I can talk more about later, that enables people to access their services regardless of their ability to pay. And our events program also, which we provide zero waste event services, including composting and recycling for very small to very, very large events, up to 50,000 people. And so those are the different hats that I wear here. And I am from Massachusetts originally, and I went to school in Vermont, University of Vermont, and moved to Maine to teach cooking and nutrition, and then came on to the Garbage to Garden team about 2.5 years ago.
Awesome. So does that make you a rock star millennial?
Yes, it does.
Cool. I just made this little video about the rock star millennials that I get to interview, and I'm compiling like a book or a set of episodes about the rock star millennials. So just another one to add to the, I think I've interviewed like 75 of them now.
Wow.
And, or 65 or something like that. Yeah. So,
But the majority of our team here is of that group. Tyler, who founded Garbage to Garden, who I'll tell the story behind the startup story as we go. But yeah, he's also of that.
Excellent. Cool. Well, I do kind of always begin the show, Phoebe, talking about your very first gardening experience. Like, were you a kid? Were you an adult? Would you grow? Who were you with? Like, what was your beginning like? Gardening, is it where you're at now? Or
well, I probably have only had my own gardens for the past couple of years, but my mom and dad did have some gardens around the house, and mostly like perennial flower gardens and things like that when I was growing up. And they've actually gotten into vegetable gardening, I think, as their schedules have kind of lightened up now that my siblings and I are out of the house and they've had a little more time. But I started gardening myself in community gardens when I was at University of Vermont. There's really a great, robust community garden system in Burlington, Vermont, as there is here in Portland. And then When I moved to Portland, I quickly got on an incredibly long waiting list for our community garden, which when I moved here a few years ago, was I think I was the 250th person on the waiting list. But I was really pleased at how quickly that list was whittled down as they added new gardens. And I actually got a plot that I think like a year and a half later. So,
holy cow. Well, there's some interest in community gardening.
Yeah. Yeah. And now I have my own garden. I have a garden on the property that I live on with about 9 raised beds that I built last year. So.
Nice. That's awesome. Well, I love all of this. So, and I had a good friend in high school who went to is it UVM?
It is. UVT? It's UVM, which is, I won't butcher it on this interview, but it's the Latin for Green Mountain. It's a Latin name for the University of Vermont, which is the University of Green Mountains. It's just something I think, so it's UVM, but it is University of Vermont.
Okay. So how incredible to hear about that. Now, how did you learn about gardening organically then?
I don't think I ever really knew of it any other way. Mm-hmm. Surprisingly. I mean, I took some, when my mom was gardening, that was how she did it. And I don't know for one reason or the other what that was. I didn't really know what her philosophy was behind that. And then at all of the community gardens in Vermont, they have like gardening workshops, and of course they're all led by people in the organic gardening community, so they're really promoting those growing methods, and so it just kind of came naturally as my gardening education went.
Okay, can I ask a question about like your community garden days? Like, do you have any secrets for that? Because I would think the one thing that would be difficult about a community garden is, to me, it's got to be convenient. Like, and is that convenient for you? Was that convenient? Was it close to where you live? Like, how did that work? Tips for people to make that successful?
Sure. Well, both Portland and Burlington are both fairly similar sized cities, around the 50,000-60,000 people or resident range. And so it's, it's definitely a city, but it's smaller than what most people consider a city. And they both have a pretty robust system of gardens. So they, depending on what corner of town you are or what neighborhood, a lot of neighborhood associations will work together to help create a garden that's convenient for their residents if one does not already exist. But for me, both of them were either walkable or bikeable from the apartments that I was living in at the time. And I honestly probably wouldn't have had much success with a garden if it weren't, because it's really hard to get out there, and even as close as they were for me, it was a big commitment to get out there to water and weed and just check up on everything, a couple times a day some days.
Right? That's what I'm saying. So what are like some tips that you would have for people, like make sure they know about the commitment ahead of time? Like, was there anything that made you more successful than others?
Totally. And both cities, there are meetings sort of in the beginning of the season. In Burlington, I think there were required meetings for new gardeners. And so they did a little bit of that educating and kind of making sure that people knew about how to be a responsible neighbor to, the person who had the plot next to you, because obviously no one, it affects every plot around you if you're neglectful over the course of the summer. And then it just doesn't hurt to build community. If you know the person in the plot next to you, you can have them help you out when you can't make it down to your plot. And that's a really important aspect. And I think most community gardens that I'm aware of, they do try to have days where they bring everyone together, whether they're work days or picnics, in the evening, to try and foster those connections.
Ooh, that's a good idea. Picnics in the evenings to share the bounty and just to build some community. And when it's a little bit cooler and people aren't so grouchy, and just to enjoy it. That's a great one.
Yeah.
So tell us about Garbage to Gardens then, because I forgot that listeners they haven't been to the website like I have and things.
Right. Yeah. Most people don't. I mean, we are, focused in the New England area, so small corner of the country. And Garbage to Garden, it's just garden, but, it goes.
I know, I keep saying garden, sorry.
And, it's a curbside composting service. And we provide composting services to households, businesses, schools, organizations of all kinds. We also provide recycling and composting for events that I mentioned earlier. as well as a variety of miscellaneous services and products. So we started in 2012. Tyler was moved to Portland from North Yarmouth, Maine. So if you're unfamiliar with that, you know, Portland is such a small city that it gets pretty spread out and, you know, becomes semi-rural pretty quickly. And so he was about 20 minutes out growing up, and his mom always composted, always had organic gardens. And he was used to being able to have that outlet for his food scraps. And so one day in a conversation with a couple of roommates, they were throwing around ideas, and it kind of came up like, wait, we can't have a compost bin out back because our landlord won't let us. Like, what can we do with our food scraps? It doesn't feel right to throw them in the trash bin. And someone said, why can't we put them out on the curb like we do our recycling? And one thing spiraled and led to another, and Tyler's, you know, very entrepreneurial by nature and had a couple of business experiences ahead of that. And he thought, that's a great idea. We would all, you know, pay for that service. We're interested. There's got to be other people out there who are similarly interested. And he wasn't afraid. He's the type of person who doesn't try and plan too much. He just dives right into something to see if it's feasible and then kind of backsteps to figure everything else out. And that worked really well. He went out and spray painted a sign, took it down to First Friday Art Walk, bought a bunch of buckets that he found at Walmart and set them up. And he had like 17 signups that night. And, you know, within a month, there was, I think, 300 households participating in the Portland area. And so, of course, all of the collection systems and customer management and all of that kind of came next. And that was built as the program grew over the next few years.
Awesome. I love that. I love so much of that because, like I said, my listeners are very entrepreneurial. They, you know, are visionaries just like Tyler, and they're the kind of, I love the way he just like started with a sign that he spray painted, grabbed a couple of buckets, grabbed the table, got out there right away, started talking from people, getting feedback, got some proof of concept, 17 people the first night, calling that a score. You know, so many people think with a business, oh, I have to have hundreds of subscribers. You know, I've got to have thousands of customers right away. No, he was happy with 17. Then he gets 300 in the first month. I mean, that's huge. I've been doing this podcast for 3 years and I'm still waiting to break 200 emails on my list. So I, you know, that's awesome that he's got that. So, and then he just kept going and growing. And then I want to hear more about the events. Like, so you go and collect recycling, because that like drives me crazy when you go to a big event and you're, especially when you're at an environmental event and people are throwing water bottles in the garbage. Like that just like infuriates me or just seems so like, you know, so how does that all work? Like, yeah, where are you guys making your money then?
Well, for events, actually, events is kind of, you know, one of the things that's been growing very quickly. We charge for our event services now. And the event service kind of grew as we realized that there was a need for it. When we first started getting involved, we were collecting food scraps and other compostables, you know, paper plates and napkins at events. And we quickly realized that we were setting up and there wasn't a recycling bin next to us. There was just a trash bin. And we were doing it just to get our name out into the community. So for us, it was a promotional tactic. You know, we have never had a huge marketing budget. So we're just trying to find ways to connect with our community and get our brand out there. But very quickly, we realized not only is there, you know, a missing piece to the puzzle, there's no recycling available, and there's no one really monitoring it to make sure that people are putting it in the right bins. But it was pretty labor intensive. And so once you started handling all three waste streams, you know, it wasn't something that we wanted to do exclusively to get our name out anymore, because it was requiring a lot of staff power, multiple trucks at some events. And so we started going back after a couple of years and, you know, explaining to the event organizers, we hope you've seen the value. And most of them stopped us in their tracks and said, yeah, totally. And they were 100% willing to work with us. They wanted us to be able to take care of the people that were working so hard at the events. We do have volunteers as well, but, you know, core staff people to handle all the real heavy lifting. And so now that is a model that, you know, we do make money on. And for big events, we can offer people a completely like hands-off experience with all of the waste and event planner. You know, they have a million other things that they need to deal with, and setting up trash and recycling receptacles is certainly not the highest priority on their list. But if we can do it and then come back and say you had a 90% diversion rate, all the better for their marketing materials as well. So.
Oh, awesome. That's a good point. Just something else for them to add, because especially all you rock star millennials out there like your environment taken care of when you're at an event. And you're right, event planners. I was just listening to John Lee Dumas yesterday, was talking about Chris Ducker, and he has this event, and John Lee Dumas was saying, and he's the guy who taught me how to podcast, and he has a huge business. And he was saying that Chris Ducker kind of ruined him for going to events, because he makes it such a great thing that it's really hard to even come in second place, forget like anything else. And so Chris Ducker was talking about what it takes to put on an event. And so you're right. If they can have somebody come and take that one thing off of their, you know, checklist, but it is an important issue you've got to deal with. If you're hosting an event where people are going to throw their trash, where they're going to put their food scraps, where they're going to do that kind of thing, is definitely a key consideration. So
right.
Now one, can I ask you a question? One issue we're having lately, because I'm going crazy, like I finally got up the guts to ask my county commissioner for the second time. Well, we got a new county commissioner. What can we do to get recycling at the green boxes? Because here in Montana, we our taxes go to having green boxes that we can all drive our garbage to. And I was like, I want a recycling thing at the green boxes. We finally got a recycling program in town. There's places I can go in town to take my garbage, but Mike and I produce 3 times the amount of recycling as we do garbage every single month. I mean, I could go to the recycling center once a week. I only need to go to the dumpster maybe once a month or once every 3 weeks at the most. Like, we just produce way more recycling. Most of it is dog food and cat food cans, I'm sorry to say. You know, there's just not, but they said, and the commissioner laughed at me, and he's like, well, they're going to stop collecting plastic. China's not taking our plastic anymore. Like, there's no plot. Like, you can't even, we're not even accepting recycling plastic in Montana, I think, or I don't know if it's just here in our county.
Yeah. But
are you having any issues with that?
You know, I don't know all of the details, so I wouldn't want to speak too much to it, but I know that that's been a huge issue over the past few months. There's been a lot that's changed as far as what China is accepting as recyclables, and that is, of course, was the market for all of our recycled materials. And so it's really changing the dynamics of recycling programs everywhere. I know in Maine, the tipping fee for recycling was always much less than the tipping fee for trash, and so that was a real incentive. It made recycling programs cost less than programs that would, you know.
What's the tipping fee?
It's basically like the per ton amount that a hauler or a city pays to dispose of that product at a plant that processes it. So they'll set a rate, and it'll be, you know, it could be any amount. It varies so much from state to state. But if the tipping fee is less for recycling, there's an immediate incentive for cities to, you know, get that out of the trash stream, which they're paying more money for, and into the recycling stream to save the money. That also makes it cheaper for businesses to have a recycling dumpster than a trash dumpster. And so because now that market has been disrupted, I think that those are, at least in Maine, probably now about even. So there's a little bit less financial incentive for those programs. But the cost for food scraps is still really, really low compared to, compared to a trash tipping fee, at least here in Maine. And so for us, you know, there's a huge amount of progress to be made there, because it's an affordable way to dispose of what would otherwise be processed in, you know, taken to a landfill or taken to a waste energy incinerator where they burn the trash.
Interesting.
So I think that what he's saying is true, that there is probably less of an argument to be made, towards increasing that, but I think that the recycling market changes so frequently and goes up and down that I don't think it makes sense to deter people and discourage residents to recycle. I think that it's still setting up a really valuable habit for them and instilling values in recycling and reusing what they can.
I think so too. And like, I was just talking in this interview I did earlier this morning about my garbage in my apartment in Browning, and like, I emptied 2 garbage bags and I was going to put them in my car, but then my car was full. So they're still sitting on my kitchen floor from I think these are garbage bags I've had there since Christmas break was over, but they don't smell. They're not making a mess on my floor. They're not the prettiest look at, but there's like nothing really in them, but like, you know, maybe the thing that I rip off the cottage cheese container, or like a lot of paper, like a plastic bag that's been reused like 10 times and is too dirty to go in the recycling. Like, they're light. There's nothing in like, because I throw all my compost goes in my compost thing. All my cans go in the can thing. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't even understand a lot of what garbage people throw away is. And I would not want food scraps in my garbage. Like, when I thought about it, what that would be like to have that rotting stuff all mixed together. Now, I wish I could say the same about the classroom garbage that we accumulate every day because our kids have to eat breakfast to go, which is like this huge movement that's pushing around the classroom where the kids are eating breakfast in the actual classroom instead of in the lunchroom.
Right.
And so everything comes in these disposable containers so that they come up with these big carts, or last year we had bags. It just depends. Every school's got its system and everything is packaged individually for each kid. And that's kind of driving me crazy. And then the milk that goes in the garbage can with them.
Yeah, the individual packaging is really hard. And I think even for households, that is what it's, the more processed food you eat, the more packaging you're probably going to have. So, you know, any of the, or takeout containers that are styrofoam, or takeout utensils, plastic utensils, chip bags, those things. But we hear, you know, anecdotally all the time from people that are so psyched after signing up for our service, and they have their bucket that they're putting all of their paper towels, their tissues, their food scraps, including meat, bones, dairy, their coffee grinds. They say that they take their trash out once a month, and, you know, we have curbside service here, so it's not as though they need to go very far to take their trash, but they just don't have to because it's not filling up. And that, I think, is it really illustrates to people exactly how much you can, if you have a recycling program in place and you have the ability to compost, whether it's through a service like ours or on site, you can really reduce the amount that you're sending, you know, away to wherever away.
Yeah. See, this is what I've been saying for years. It shouldn't cost anything more. It's just a matter of people sorting. It's the same amount of garbage. It just, right. Instead of, you're going to dedicate, instead of having to have 10, 15 dumpsters that are all garbage, 5 of those can be just recyclable and the other 10 can be garbage if that's the way you go. If it was my life, 10 of them would be recycling and 5 would be garbage, but whatever. For our community, it's not going to change. And then instead of the one day that they have to drive the 65 miles to Troy, which is where our garbage goes to our landfill, they can drive it the 65 miles to Kalispell the day they're taking the recycling. Like, it's the same trucks. Like, I don't see how it has to cost more. It's just teaching people how to sort it. And if we can teach the bears to stay out of the garbage, whatever way they're doing, they should be able to teach the people, the humans, how to sort.
And we feel like proved that that's totally possible. We are, of course, you know, accessing, especially in the beginning, it was like the very early adopters, but we've worked so hard to increase awareness about composting that people are coming to us with no prior experience or education about gardening or real food waste as an issue, but, you know, their neighbor has it and they've seen the bucket out and they want to figure out what it is and they know it's a good thing to do and how can they get started. And all you have to do is provide people with a good conversation and maybe some visuals and some lists and some, you know, whatever it takes to get them to understand why it's important that they focus on keeping the plastics and the metals out of the bin. And the, you know, the farm that we bring all of the material to, they're so pleased with the product that comes in. There's virtually no contamination because it just takes education over, you know, and sometimes it does take a while, especially, for instance, with schools or with, you know, businesses where there's a lot of staff turnover. But if you put in the time, then you'll be really pleased and people catch on really quickly and they take it home to wherever they are when they leave school or leave work. And it's not as hard as people.
It's not. And to me, it's like throwing money in the garbage because we spend a fortune on buying dirt and good soil to grow our vegetables in. And it's just really hard to come up with that stuff to begin with. And so if we can just make it, and meanwhile, we're throwing it in the garbage, like, it just makes no sense to me. Like, my efficiency scale is going off, like, its register every day. Sometimes I get, and I've been fighting this battle ever since I moved to Montana. Not since I moved to Montana, because Missoula is pretty good. You know, everywhere you go on most college campuses, there's places to throw your plastic bottle. You know, they've got the recycling down, but other parts out here just drive me crazy. And especially since I've had my podcast, but that's why I love my podcast. I even posted on Facebook today. Like, I love my Facebook friends, because in light of all the shootings, like, my Facebook friends have just, like, my feed just, like, calms my soul as I watch, the news. And this morning, talking to you, my heart's just melting. I'm looking out at the sun. It's so gorgeous on the snow. And just, I just feel so much better that you guys are out there doing this and really making it happen. Because I know the baby boomer generation, there were a lot of them that, you know, would like to see these things. And but you guys are actually figuring out the way to put it into action. And I have to say, I think a lot of it is our ability to communicate online. Like, people can badmouth Facebook and people, kids staring into their phones too much and not communicating with the person in front of them. And, you know, there's a time and place for it, but look at us communicating today. And then this is going to go out and thousands of people are going to listen to this and just share it. And they're going to feel better and they're going to go do these things in their communities. Cause I have listeners all around the world and, you know, people are in big, big audiences in Florida and California and Texas. So probably some people, and one of my most top downloaded, she's been in the top five, if not the top one or two, almost consistently, is this girl, Alyssa, who has a very similar business here in Montana. And just people are so interested in this. They want the options. They want the ease. And let me tell you, compost smells way less than dirtying garbage and the garbage that's all mixed together. So
it's one of those things that, like, is the first question people have, especially if you're working with a business that might be a little bit apprehensive about it. Or a school that, you know, not every stakeholder is really on board with it yet. The first thing they say is, but isn't it gonna smell? And you have to remind them that you're not actually producing any different waste because you're composting it. Like, it's everything that's already in the trash bin sitting there for however long. And so it's really, you know, just a simple little change of routine every day for people, but it doesn't actually change anything beyond that. It's just, which bin are you putting it in?
Yeah, I always think the custodians would probably like it better because it's going to make their job easier. They're not going to be hauling off these, like, leaking garbage bags
of,
like, nasty gooey and having to clean out the garbage cans. And let's talk about that, because one of the cool things that you guys are doing is you give the people a clean container so they don't have any of that mess that sometimes does come in the bottom of your compost thing. I don't know. We just leave ours out in the rain for a couple of days and they get cleaned out pretty good. But you guys give people, and then I also was reading about, is it biodiesel collection or something that they're making soap and biodiesel?
Yes. It's
all right.
Really,
go ahead and talk.
System we've got going on. So the way that this service works is households sign up and they receive 1 to 2, depending on their household's needs, 6-gallon buckets, and they fill them up every week. We don't require that they use liners of any kind, because we actually come by and on service day, we swap them out with a clean bucket so that they don't have to clean it themselves. And you can imagine that's a really big perk, especially if, you know, you live in the city and you don't actually have a hose. And so you might be trying to, like, get it in your tiny sink or your bathtub or something to wash it out. You don't have to do it often, but people might want to rinse it out every once in a while. And the clean bin really gets people to, you know, buy into something that they might otherwise have had that kind of ick factor preventing them from really embracing. And in addition to the clean bin every week, another perk of the service is that they are eligible to receive a bag of finished compost every week of the year if they so choose. So, and that's included in the $14 per month service fee. And, you know, many people request it. Many more do not. I would say there's so many different reasons that people, you know, reach out to us, and initially their interest is piqued. For some people, it's exclusively the soil. They are already buying soil. They can get it back and they can dispose of their food scraps. For some people, they're really just looking for a sustainable way to, you know, get rid of their food scraps. Whatever the reason is, you know, there are all sorts of them. And some people take advantage of the soil, the finished compost, 52 weeks of the year. And others, you know, obviously our biggest soil delivery months are May, June, July, and October, you know, when or September, October, when people are starting to put the garden to bed at the end of the year as well. So the soap, though, right. The soap, we work with Main Standard Biofuels, who has been a partner of ours since the very beginning. And residents can collect their cooking oil in a pickle jar or a peanut butter jar or anything else that they would otherwise be throwing into their recycling bin. And they put it out with their bucket, so they can either leave it on top of their bucket or right next to the bucket. Our field operators are trained to kind of hone in on that. as they're doing their route, and we bring it back here and empty it into a larger container that the biofuel company comes and empties out whenever it's filled up. And they make soap with it, which we use to clean our residential buckets, you know, in order to give them back to people smell free.
Awesome. I love all that. Amazing. You can save your recycled vegetable oil too.
Before we get to the root of things, we're going to thank our sponsors and affiliate links. Announce my first sponsor, Robin Kellison from the Good Seed Company. Welcome, Robin.
Yay! Thank you. I'm so happy to be here and very happy to be your sponsor. We have a large variety of locally adapted, open-pollinated, non-GMO vegetable, flower, and herb seeds. And we hope you'll enjoy visiting our website, goodseedco.net or Good Seed Montana, and seeing the resources that we offer for becoming a better gardener, a better seed saver, and a member of building resiliency around food in your community.
FreeGardenCourse.com. Mike and I have developed some lessons to help you create your very own organic oasis. We'll guide you through the steps to build your perfect natural landscape, an edible earth-friendly yard, a sustainable deep-bed garden, or even start a small profitable market farm. We'll show you how to save time, lower your produce bill, collect usable data, eat healthy, nutritious food with minimal labor, use the most effective and efficient production methods currently being used in backyard gardens as well as market farms, and maybe even help you find some profitable markets. We've designed it to save you time, lower your produce bill, and help you eat healthy, nutritious food. There's checklists, there's outside reading, video assignments. You can join the online Facebook community where there's lots of people from around the world to help you get your garden started today. So remember, freegardencourse.com.
All right. Well, there's a part of my show that I call getting to the root of things. I mean, do you want to like answer some of the, is there anything else about garbage for garden that you want to say that I've forgotten?
Well, I talked a little bit about our residential program, you know, how that works, the $14 per month fee. I think one thing that really has benefited us and is a huge asset to the community is our volunteer program, which actually allows people to volunteer with us or with nonprofits that we're connected with in exchange for free service the following month, so that we never have to turn anyone away and that we really are a composting solution for every resident of the communities we serve. And you know, a varying number of people will volunteer with us any month, anywhere from 50 to 100, which you know, isn't a huge percentage of our participants, but for those people, it's really important to be able to continue composting, and they're really dedicated to volunteering to make sure that they can continue composting and they still have that option available to them.
So are you guys a nonprofit?
We are not. We're a social enterprise, so we're a for-profit business.
Awesome.
But that was just kind of, you know, we're mission-based, and I think from the very beginning, we wanted to provide composting, you know, for everyone, and that was a way that we could do it. And it also helps connect us to the community, and it helps provide a service for nonprofits. They can provide us with a list of events each month for the following month, and we send it out in a newsletter, so to recruit volunteers for the next following month. And so it helps them fill volunteer needs that may not otherwise have been met, because they send it at the very end of the month, so they can know what days out there still remain with no one signing up for, whether it's a food distribution or a garden work day or sorting at a medical supply center or whatever it is.
Where do you find you get the most volunteers from?
Well, our volunteers are all participants, so they're all Garbage to Garden subscribers. And I would say the most popular volunteer opportunities are definitely volunteer opportunities with Cultivating Community, which is the organization that runs the community gardens in Portland. People love getting involved in gardening projects. It really is something that's important to a lot of the people that subscribe to Garbage to Garden. Also, anti-hunger opportunities. We offer a lot of those in the winter. So working with different organizations that are providing food distributions, either schools or just general community members. And then of course the concerts. We do a lot of zero waste recycling, event recycling and composting for large concerts here in Portland. And people love that because it's an opportunity to come see some of their favorite artists. So those concerts, we usually have a wait list running. A lot of people come out of the woodwork in the summer months for those kinds of events, beer festivals, culinary festivals, concerts, and things like that, that you might otherwise, you know, have to buy a ticket to attend.
And so what do? They just have to like help clean up at the end so they get to go participate. And then as long as they clean up at the end or set up in the beginning,
For our events, we do all setup and breakdown, and they'll help sorting. So the way that our event program works is that we set up the stations and then we sort them throughout the night, making sure that anything that's meant to be in the compost is in the compost, anything that's meant to be recycled is in the trash or is in the recycling bin, and that none of that is in the trash by the end of the night. So we never pull out bag of trash throughout an event. There's always, you know, at least an 85% diversion rate, and that's because people are keeping up with the sorting. So we pass them all out, we give them tongs, and they go around and they can kind of listen to the music and they can work in groups of people if they'd like. But they're just helping us, you know, maintain the cleanliness of each station and helping us pick up any litter on the field that we see throughout the event.
Nice. Oh, this is so cool. Good for you guys. See, this is why you can't tell me millennials don't totally rock. Sorry. My phone, like, it doesn't matter if I have the volume off. It's on vibrate. It's on do not disturb. The alarm goes off. And I finally figured out why. It's because Apple wants to wake me up. If I'm, like, listening to an audiobook or I turn the volume off, they want to make sure, because your alarm's supposed to wake you up, right? But I have these alarms that go, like, hey, it's time for spelling. Hey, you got to go pick up your kids in 5 minutes. Hey, you got to drop your kids off here in 5 minutes, you know. Here, 3 minutes to, you know. We're starting social studies, and like, and they all have different sounds to tell the kids. So I'm like the, you know, the podcaster.
I had a volunteer orientation the other night and I had an alarm go off. I'd set like 10 of them because I had to buy coffee when I left and I didn't want to forget because I knew I'd be so mad if I got home and didn't have a bag of coffee for the next morning. So I press snooze and apologize to everyone that I really can't shut this off because if I do by the end of it, I will forget. Really grumpy in the morning.
Oh my gosh, I love that. I'm so glad to hear that because I do that too. Or I'll like keep walking around with the song playing because snooze is 9 minutes. And if I hit snooze, I need to like keep going for like a minute sometimes, or my hands are full and I can't get to my pocket to shut off. I'm like walking around the school with the song playing and there are people will be looking at me. I'm like, but I can't forget that. I can't, like, as soon as I hit one or the other button, it's going to be too late. I've got to have it keep going. That's right. So funny. I know, but I'm trying to come up with like an app that I can set that's like my school alarm. So like on a day like today, or like last week, we had 4 snow days out of 5. It would have been so nice to be able to say, shut the thing. But I wasn't, if I had known we were gonna have 4 days on Monday, I would have maybe taken the time to shut off, but no. And so yeah, anyway, do you want to tell us about all right, well wait, before I ask you like some regular questions, like, is there anything else that we forgot?
Well, I wanted to ask you about whether or not you compost at the school that you work at.
No, we do not compost at the school we work at. And that's like the bane of my existence. No, we're working on it. And they got a woman who's like from the Farm to School Network who came in and she was working on a grant. And she asked me to join the committee with like 10 other people. The problem is we can't find a time to meet. And so she ended up doing most of the work herself. And then I don't know what's going to happen, but I have kind of broached the subject. The custodians last year at the school I was at last year were totally on board, but and because we were running the garden club last year, and what's killing me is they have this cutest little community garden and there's like 8 deep beds down there already and they're empty, and I'm like, if we're going to plant anything in them, we need to fill them with dirt. We need dirt. Do you know what the dirt's going to cost to fill these beds? Why aren't we saving compost? But then I did have this brainstorm this year that we should put the compost in the greenhouse because they have this huge greenhouse.
We work with about 40 K-12 schools in Maine. And so I was just going to ask if you did, you know, just about some of the programs that are in your area, if there were any, because that's one of the things that, you know, I'm always interested in finding out what works for other people in their neck of the woods.
No, but we're getting there. I was going to say, so what's working if you have 40 schools? Like, what's worked for you to get those schools? Just kind of educating the school board and the administrators, getting someone on board? Like,
yeah, usually there's, you know, a few key groups of people that it's really necessary to have on board, and that's the food services program, the facility staff. Those are like the two biggest at the end of the day. If every actual decision maker in the school board or in the district administrative offices is on board, it's not going to matter if there's a lot of resistance. So having them on from the very beginning and really like empowering them to make the decisions about how it's going to look in the cafeteria and who's responsible for what, that's an important part of it. And also working with any green teams or any teachers who run the garden program or who have an interest in it, because that's where they can work with students to really generate a lot of enthusiasm. And we love that when a green team wants to get involved and help promote it and educate, you know, to the rest of the school. We take our time with schools, getting them set up and implementing the program. I'd say there's usually about like 6 months of work on the back end ahead of starting the program. And then we kick it off with an all school assembly with all of the teachers and all of the students. And we talk about, you know, what we do at Garbage to Garden and what composting is and how it's going to work at the school with pictures of the new stations. And then we have staff and volunteers in the lunchroom every day for 2 weeks, making sure that we're just kind of drilling it in to everyone's head about what goes where, so that we can, you know, within 2 weeks, you pretty much see every type of item that's going to come through the cafeteria. So you hope that you can get all of those questions out. And then just working and, you know, doing that again every September, if that's what's necessary. But we've had schools that the green teams have helped with a presentation. They might have even run the whole presentation. We've had green teams that have gone around to different classrooms in the elementary school and did like brief little educational snippets for their, their fellow students. And that's always been really great to try and ramp up excitement about the program ahead of the start date. And for us, cleaning the bins is something that we do for our commercial service as well. And so that's been really key, I think, in getting buy-in from maybe wary, skeptical superintendents and skeptical food service or custodial staff, is that we have a pressure washer on our truck. So for any of the restaurants, schools, businesses we work with, we rinse out the bin on site and it kind of leaves it as clean as it was, you know, when they got it the first day of service. And that allows them to pull it in and out of the cafeteria without having to worry about it. And they always know that it's going to be ready for use, you know, really eliminating and kicking that ick factor.
Kicking the ick factor. That might be the topic of our title of our talk.
Yeah.
But that's true. But like I said, I still think they're going to find it cleaner, easier to deal with.
Totally.
The fact that you guys haul it off for them would probably make, because that's been my thing. Like, that's what I was just getting to, is the community garden is too far away. I mean, yeah, it's only a 5-minute walk, but when you only have 30 seconds to deal with this problem or whatever, you know, that can be a complicating factor. So
right, and we are pretty familiar with some of the schools in other parts of the state who've set up on-site composting. We're really lucky that we have a education and outreach person at the main DEP whose sole focus is composting, and so he'll work as a consultant with any schools who are interested in setting up an on-site composting, you know, situation, to figure out exactly what type of a system works best for them, where it should be placed, and work out the kinks as far as like who's gonna be handling what types of responsibilities involved in it. And he's a huge asset, and he's, you know, a great friend of ours. And whenever there's a school that reaches out to us that, you know, is just a little bit too far, we're not gonna be able to get to them, we'll always refer them to him. And he's helped them set up a lot of successful on-site operations. And he runs the main compost school. So for any listeners who are really interested in learning really about how to manage a compost operation of any scale, you know, up to industrial scale composting, that's a great place. It's a week long and you get a lot of bang for your buck, and you'll come out, you know, more prepared than anyone needs to be, really, especially if it's a smaller operation.
Who is this person?
His name's Mark King, and he works for the main DEP, but he runs the main compost school also, and that's a great place for people who are interested in more of how to operate a large-scale compost facility. But his role with the DEP, he's not a regulatory man, so he is simply there to educate the community about composting at all levels. So he'll do presentations for communities about home-scale composting. He'll work with schools to set up larger
systems on site, and he'll also work with, you know, other people who are trying to establish on-farm composting sites and get them up to regulatory standards.
Okay, and just for listeners, because I had to Google it, Maine DEP stands for the State of Maine Department of Environmental Protection. Yes. Because at first, like, I'm not even, like, clicking. I'm going Maine, and I'm spelling it M-A-I-N, and I'm thinking he works for you guys. He's the main, he's in the main department, the composting department in your business. Yeah. And then I realized, wait, she means Maine, the state, and the DEP must be, is not standing for department. It, I mean, it is, but it's Department of Environmental Protection. It's not just, anyway.
Right.
So but you know what, I'm
EPA, we have a DEP, it's, you know, they're the same essentially.
I love it. Like, I've been listening to my podcast, and I know listeners, I say I love it way too much. I need to find something else to say. I found myself, I'm like, oh my gosh, Jack, you got to come up with a better thing. But but I do, because, you know, I live in a fairly I don't know, what do you want to call it? Conservative, Republican base, like, down with government, get rid of the EPA, wipe them out. They're destroying our timber industry, yada, yada, yada. Like, you know, just very rednecky place where I am right here. So I'm in total support of the EPA. I'm glad they were created back in 1970 or whenever they were, which I think, believe it or not, it was like Richard Nixon is the one who created the EPA, I want to say. I could be wrong, but just great stuff, because I'm going to have to check that out, check that class out, and look into him. Maybe he'll come even do a show with me.
He might. He'd probably love to. He actually, when I got to work today, I got here a little late because I was taking care of some things, but I was getting out of my car, and he and his boss were walking into the parking lot, and, you know, food waste is a regulated material, so I could have been one of two things, like stopping to say hey, or coming to check on the site and make sure you're, you know, everything's up to standard. And they were just coming to say hey. They're huge fans of what we do at Garbage to Garden, and they're super proud to have us in the state of Maine, and so they were actually coming to see if they could bring a national group through in August to show them more about what we do. So that was fun little visit to have earlier, and they're a huge resource, and I think that the DEP or the EPA can be a huge resource for anyone trying to start a similar business or a composting operation, or even connecting you to services like ours, because most of the states now are starting to look at food waste and how to address it and what type of infrastructure is there. So the EPA or the DEP of your state is going to be the body that's going to be starting to compile all of that information. It's definitely a resource anyone should take advantage of.
Well, I have to say, the woman here in Montana is the one that got our recycling program started in Lincoln County. And she definitely started out with having, like, she was full of great tips. And she talked about, when they first wanted to have a site, she said, well, what you should do is just start out with, like, once a season, just like these, like one day where you have all these volunteers come and you just collect it all for one day. And then eventually we got our full site after starting out that way. But I am looking at the clock. We are kind of running out of time, I guess. So anything else that we've forgotten or that you wanted to mention that seems talked about a lot?
We've been all over the map. Yeah, I'm not really sure exactly what would be most valuable. If you have any last minute questions, I do hope that, you know, anyone will reach out if they're interested in learning more. We do hope to be expanding. We have massive expansion plans for the next year, and are going to be pursuing different avenues for that, one of which might be a potential franchise opportunity for people who are kind of interested in getting involved in this sort of an industry and don't know where to get started. We've done a lot of work over the past 5 years to make all of our systems really replicable. We designed the software in-house to run all of our routes and customer management, and we fabricate our own trailers on site. And so, yeah, stay tuned. I think that, you know, you might be seeing a Garbage to Garden close by in the next few years.
Cool. Oh my gosh, I love my podcast so much. My heart is just totally, like, refilled with good vibes and good things going on today, because, you know, the news has been pretty depressing lately. So it's great to get to share some of this great stuff. And you might make an awesome Earth Day bonus episode because that'll be about when this is coming out. So what a great thing to hear about come Earth Day. Although it might come out a little before that. I doubt it, though. I don't know. I'm so, like, disconnected between school and everything. It's a miracle I'm getting my podcast put out still every Monday. So
have you been working really hard? Is this vacation week for you, too? Are you trying to bang out a bunch of episodes?
This is vacation day. We get one day. I know. That's why I'm so booked today, because this is our day off, our official day off. Now, granted, I said we had 4 snow days last week that were unexpected, but I couldn't book interviews because I thought I'd be teaching. Right. So this is our one day off. We have one day. Last year we were supposed to have 2 days for Easter weekend before and 2 days after. Then we had to make up our snow day, so we only got one. And I'm not sure. I think we only have Good Friday off this year, and then we have Memorial Day between January and June. It is just, we're all like bouncing off the walls. And then yesterday we were supposed to go on our field trip to Glacier Park, but my principal said it's too cold and we rescheduled it for March 12th. So I hope it doesn't, but it'll be a more beautiful day maybe then. I don't know. It was kind of a rough day yesterday for my kids. They were all like, what? We're not going? Because we didn't even get that. We're not going until like late Tuesday night. So anyway, but this is so wonderful and I am very interested, and I'm sure I have listeners out there that would be interested in franchising or following this business model or getting involved, or perhaps some of them are even like booking their flight to move to Maine.
right.
But you know, I love to hear that. I love to hear it's expanding, and it's so funny because I like went to this like startup weekend and I went some coaching classes because our team came in first place, and one of the coaches, who actually is our governor now, or he's our congressman, this guy, Greg Gianforte, who's a total Republican. And I met him and he was saying, he gets on this phone call with me. I win this coaching call and he gets on the phone. And he's like, so are you ready to create some jobs? And I was like, huh, what, me create jobs? Like, I never thought that I would have any, like, this was way back, I think before I even started my podcast. And I was like, no, I want to sell some note cards. And just like, I just had joined because I wanted to be an artist and try to build my artist website. But ever since he said that, I felt like maybe I should be able to create some jobs. So this isn't really me creating a job, but it's telling somebody about a job they maybe could get for a new innovative business that I love, a green business.
And hopefully there are definitely other companies and organizations doing the same thing. And I think that there'll only be more and more jobs related to, you know, recycling and diverting food scraps, because it's going to be mainstream. Composting, you know, it's only a matter of years, I think, before we've all got composting, you know, alongside our trash and recycling for those of us in cities that have a curbside service available to us, because people are just realizing that it makes sense and that we have this valuable resource that we're wasting. And it's costing us a lot of money and we've got to do something about it. So,
oh my gosh, I love you. Well, tell everybody how to find you guys, because I have another interview starting in 3 minutes and
no
I
problem.
Gotta go, I guess.
You can find us online at garbagetogarden.org or on Facebook.com/garbagetogarden, spelled out T-O. And we're also on Twitter and Instagram, garbagetogarden. Pretty easy to find. If you Google curbside composting Maine, will also be the first thing that comes up.
Cool. Garbage T-O Garden. Garbage to Garden. She put that little spell at the T-O, but I just want to make sure everybody understood what that was. Thank you so much for sharing with us, Phoebe, and being a great rock star millennial and just saving our planet. And tell Tyler we're sorry we missed him, but you rocked the mic today and you have a great weekend.
Yeah, you as well.
Okay, thanks, Phoebe.
Thank you. Bye.
Save. FreeGardenCourse.com. Mike and I have developed some lessons to help you create your very own organic oasis. We'll guide you through the steps to build your perfect natural landscape, an edible earth-friendly yard, a sustainable deep-bed garden, or even start a small profitable market farm. We'll show you how to save time, lower your produce bill, collect usable data, eat healthy, nutritious food with minimal labor,
Use the most effective and efficient production methods currently being used in backyard gardens as well as market farms, and maybe even help you find some profitable markets. We've designed it to save you time, lower your produce bill, and help you eat healthy, nutritious food. There's checklists, there's outside reading, video assignments. You can join the online Facebook community where there's lots of people from around the world to help you get your garden started today. So remember, freegardencourse.com. Thank you for listening to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'd like to encourage you to visit our website at organicgardenerpodcast.com. That's just organicgardenerpodcast.com. And it will link right to the show notes and all that we've talked about on today's show. Thanks for listening, and remember to grow local.